Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you that the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we always welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But we ask that you hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us this evening our good friend Bill Sardi, who is a health journalist, and he, of course, certainly researches the latest in health developments and knowledge, and has a wonderful website, AskBillSardi.com. That's AskBillSardi.com. I just got an email this evening from some lady who said, I just can't find him. I've got Ask Bill Sardi and ask, please ask Bill Sardi. And I keep sending this email to looking for Bill Sardi, Sardy.com. And of course, I've got to tell her there's an I. It's Sardi.com, AskBillSardi.com. That's the reason she can't get to him. But we'll talk about some of the health issues later. This evening, we were going to start out talking about, of course, a program. If you watch television very much, you'll often see these ads put up, and they show this a boy, perhaps he's getting ready to go to college, and he says, "Boy, you know, if it's because of what I did in high school that or in grammar school that you know that I'm getting such good grades." And so he twists around, and suddenly he looks like he was just entering maybe high school, and then he says, "Well, it's because what I got in grammar school, that's why I'm doing well." And then he twists around, and he's suddenly much younger, and he's just going into grammar school. And then, of course, he twists around again, and he's just going into kindergarten. And, of course, it's because I was prepared, you know, when I went to kindergarten that I was able to do so well. And this then, of course, led me to doing so well in later life. And, of course, as Bill pointed out when we talked this morning, what we were going to talk about, we are being programmed, we're being conditioned by the controlled medium to give the idea that what we need is, before children enter kindergarten, why they are to come under government control. And there's this whole idea, the NEA is pushing it, the National Education Association, to actually have children begin preschool, 3 years of age, so the government can get an opportunity to indoctrinate them at that age to destroy their belief in God and family and country. As one of the educators said, every child when they come to kindergarten is emotionally ill. After all, they believe in country and they believe in these traditional values. It's our job to change that. Well, it's much easier to change them when they're 3 years old, and so they really want to control the minds of our children, thinking that if they can control them, they can remake society and mold it in the way they want it to be. And these are the elitist concepts of the people who control the educational establishment. They tie into the Council on Foreign Relations and the Bilderbergers, and of course the Trilateral Commission and the Club of Rome. These are people of great wealth and great power who believe that they were born to rule, and of course are intent upon establishing a feudal society in what was once the land of the free and the home of the brave. Bill Sardi, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Well, of course, this is the proposition funded, Prop 10 funded program in California, and it's called First Five. It's a comprehensive program that's supposed to kind of indoctrinate or really help. I'm not saying there's no benefits for kids, as it explains, it's the First Five program from California from prenatal stage to 5 years of age. My gosh, government has got their hands at our kids before they can hardly get out of the womb. And it's all handled by a commission called the California Children and Families Commission. And let's not derail them or make fun of them in any way, because these are people that are working hard and trying to do something good. And this kind of program is focused really on a whole nationwide network of do-gooders, people that are trying to help the disenfranchised, the people that are down on the bottom, help them with raising their kids. And what they're recognizing is by the time these kids hit the first grade or so, they're already so far behind, they're not ready for school. So we understand those issues. The question is government the answer? And is this an open door for them to come in and indoctrinate all of our kids? And, of course, what they're trying to do, they've got this money, so they're running television commercials now, to kind of soften us up for the whole thing. But I was remarked that it wasn't really, I realize they don't want to point this at the lower economic groups per se, but the way you read the literature here, it sounds like it's going to be a universal program. And basically, this is going to be a tremendous burden on taxpayers, because they're just going to probably try to mandate really some sort of government-sponsored or paid type of preschool type of activity. And, of course, all the preschool owners, private ones in the state here, are just concerned, because they're really afraid of essentially a government takeover. You're talking of government running really these things. And basically, they leave the preschools there, but they're going to, of course, if they handle the vouchers for these kids to go in there, this is what goes on today, then they can force certain rules in there. They've started already by enforcing certain rules that a lot of these preschool homes, are having to revamp their play yards and live up to safety standards. Kids have played in these things for 20 years, nothing's happened. they have a very low rate of troubles, but they're still having to go through and spend thousands of dollars to do all this because they receive public money. Now, we're not saying you shouldn't upgrade or do these kind of things or there aren't benefits, but it gets to be an onerous thing when you're trying to fund and make a profit out of these things. These people live on low margins, and so I'm not saying they're not profitable, but there are questions there. And then, of course, now they have a mandate to, of course, influence curriculum because now they pay for these things. So what this California First 5 program, as I watched television, I began to see all these ads, even on at prime time, and I said, where did they get the money? Well, then I realized it came from a smoker's tax, and they're using this large pool of money. And, of course, as you really realize how far it goes, over a half a million children nationwide have been handled by programs like this. Obviously, in California, this is a smoker's tax. In other states, I don't know where the money comes from, but 37 states have enacted some kind of a home visiting system. Well, this bothers me a little bit. I realize it sounds innocent. I realize that's wonderful. Let's go in the home. But you're sending a kind of a government snoop agent into the homes of all these families. And it just has me alarmed and concerned. And as I read over the reports and a wonderful kind of a summary report here by one of the government writers here did a wonderful job. And they're trying to show you that really, the results of all this are marginal, that often parents don't cooperate. There's a dropout rate from 38% to 64%. That was at least in a program in Hawaii. Some of the programs spent as little as 20% of the time on working with child development. And, of course, that's what it's all about. They pointed out when they go in the homes, rather than doing this in preschools, well, then you better focus on the parents because it's more on parenting because the parents are going to be in the way and they're going to be suspicious and this kind of thing, and so you're working on that aspect of it. It just goes on to say that the thing that caught my eye, 40 hours or more of home visiting service is a year, says this is not enough time to persuade parents to do much different and change behaviors and so on. So really what they're saying is let's get them in, the school, the preschool, and of course, this has us concerned. I mean, these are things that were done for all of you who forget history, forget the good intentions, forget that we're doing something good for a moment, and just step back because this is exactly what was done in an era when a man with a little short mustache was in Germany. These are the things that were done in other countries the same way. Please, we're not equating the same exactly, but we are concerned. These are the kinds of things. They grab a hold of kids, begin to indoctrinate them, realize the parents are they'll never be able to change, and all of a sudden they've got your kids in the next generation with whatever they want to preach. And we're concerned about some of these issues, sexual orientation, all these kind of things that they want to get to our kids on. So if they have them all in preschool, how is mom and dad, how are they going to bond with children? The very big conflict I was able to get out of this is they're teaching bonding between parent and child, but if you put them all in preschool, how do you do that? I know a lot of kids are in preschool already. That happens to be a fact of life, but it just seemed to me they were going the wrong way here. That isn't the ideal way to go, and preschool may be a practical way for working parents. We realize that. But
well, I think, of course, one of the big tragedies of today is when the mother's working. I think the mother should be home looking after the children. And what they've done is, of course, done everything they could to get the mother out of the home to make it seem sort of demeaning if she's just a housemaker, a housewife. She ought to be a career woman. She ought to be out there competing with men. She ought to be out there really accomplishing something. And they've drilled this into so many young women that, of course, they don't want to be just mothers, which I think is, of course, for the greatest profession in the world. I mean, shaping the minds and lives and hearts of their children. Oh, no, no. You want to put them in a preschool, and then, of course, you can really accomplish something, and look at all the money you're going to make. And so we've been really doing everything we can to force the women out of the home. And then, of course, what are you going to do with the children? Well, the obvious thing would be the preschool. And that gives the government the ability to begin to indoctrinate them. And people really don't understand the history of education in this country. But back back, and if you have an Encyclopedia Britannica, they haven't erased this story, at least not from the earlier encyclopedias. There was a man named Robert Owen, and he was the son of a very wealthy British industrialist, and he came to the United States in about 1820, and he was a communist, and of course, as most communist leaders, they had a great deal of money. His father had a large factory in England, gave him the money, and they were going to set up the ideal commune here in the United States. It was called New Harmony. In Indiana, it was the ideal utopian society where everybody would live happily together, and of course, it lasted about 2 years because communism doesn't work. And so Robert Owen came up with the idea, the only way that they were really going to be able to make communism work, in other words, everybody be willing to subjugate themselves to the good of the state, to the good of the society, under the control of the new rulers, was, of course, to get the children on the minds of the children. So they set up to create a secret society to take over education. And there was a man named Erastus Brownson who was part of that secret society, eventually broke with Owen when he became a born-again Christian. When Brownson became a born-again Christian, he talked about the secret society, but of course they did, of course, eventually take over education in this country with the help of Horace Mann, and they sold it to the churches who, prior to that time, had been the foundation of the educational system in America, and the church school was the foundation of our society. Oh, well, we want everybody. I mean, we may have 90%, 95% literacy, but we want everybody to be able to read. And of course, we want them, of course, to be able to read the Bible. And you certainly aren't against people reading the Bible. And so they really, of course, talked the church schools into transferring responsibilities for education from the church to the government. And now, of course, we have almost a million people who are either partially or totally illiterate. Well, one out of every four 12th graders really is incapable of reading, you know, even at the fourth grade level. And that's the end result of the plan that began back in 1820 with Robert Owen. But most people have never heard of this, nor do they understand the mentality of these people who would control our children and remake society.
Well, certainly the adoption of large government is akin to religion today. I mean, we don't see it as secularization. We see it as a wonderful provision. We're a country that believes in God, and so therefore a country that believes in God and does these programs. We don't see it as secularization. And of course, this is a problem for us. One of the issues that I was hinting at here is with marginal ideas, with marginal evidence that any of this has worked, and here's this government report saying, it's just that the quality of infant and toddler care is such that it may not benefit children very much anyway, says the report. So here they're putting this money in. Well, let me tell you how much money this is. The cost of home visiting programs, instead of going to a preschool, is about $1,300 to $5,000 per family per year. Now, we're talking about 5 years of this. It'd be as much as $25,000 a family added to the tax roll burdens, and then something like an early Head Start program, you're talking about preschool and so on, could cost as much as $11,500 per family per year. So you're talking well over $55,000 there for the 5 years prenatal to age five. So this has just tremendous costs. Where will we get that kind of money? I guess we're going to hope more people smoke cigarettes, and we can just up the taxes there.
I think that the one saving grace for America may be the fact that our leaders in their wisdom have shipped, encouraged our industries to move offshore, have subsidized them moving offshore. In fact, I learned just yesterday that our leaders were actually, had given massive amounts of money to the Chinese communists to improve their ports so they could more efficiently ship their goods to America. And we know, of course, they're actually giving financial aid to industries that will move away from America. But what that's doing is gutting our economy, and maybe the best thing that ever happened is suddenly there's not going to be any money to pay for this. And we're not coming out of this coming recession because we're not going to have the money, we're not going to have the jobs, we do not have the industrial base. We still have only about 14 million industrial jobs in America. They create 10 to 15 million new industrial jobs in communist China every year. And, of course, we are not going to have the money in the future. And the only thing that will prevent these socialists from getting these programs in is we don't have the money. And if we don't have the money, why, they're going to have to start laying off social workers. All I can say is hallelujah.
Well, absolutely. One of the problems with the social worker issue, I came in, of course, in real personal contact, first-person contact with, because we've done a little bit of foster care work, and I'm going to not say much on this because it may jeopardize our ability to get more foster children, but we have observed in two cases that we took care of some children in our home where the first two cases that were brought to our home were families of children who really had, there was no legal right for them to be taken away from their parents. In one case, it was a mother who, a Mexican mother, spoke Spanish largely, had five children, and she was still nursing her children when the police came and took two small six-month-old babies away. And I thought whoever did that should turn their badge in. It just didn't belong. She wasn't abusing her children. There was just a question of it, and because they couldn't speak Spanish and so on, there was a confusion, and these babies got taken away. Well, of course, you know, you can't go after government. Of course, they're just too big, and these people had no wherewithal, and, of course, they couldn't fight it. Luckily, they got their child back within a couple of weeks. And, of course, then we had another child staying in our home just a little bit older than that, and he was kept away from his family for 8 months, and after complete investigation and talking with the father and the mother and so on, and we pursued this with great length, and actually became advocates for them and their son, and it turned out that there was really no foundation for pulling this boy away. Now, if there was question, I realized they err on the side of the child, and so they can take them away until they clear the air. But clearing the air took 8 months. It should have taken 30 days at the most. And so, you know, when the Gestapo comes to your home, in this case social workers, with some police as backup, and in this case they asked a father to produce some clothes and, could you produce where your child's clothing is? And when he went in the bedroom, they took the child out the front door, and he came out, no child. They had taken him. So, you know, that's a pretty big thing to confront.
Now, I think the problem is that whatever they say goes, they have no rights in these family courts. And so the American people know that they've suspended, in essence, the Constitution, and these people are above the law. And social workers cannot be sued for gross neglect or for doing harm to a child, even taking that child and putting it to a home where they'll be sexually abused. Well, that's not their fault. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our special guest is Bill Sardi. We're talking about the child abuse industry, and of course we're talking about really this whole idea that the state is responsible for children, and this whole concept has changed. At one time, everybody acknowledged that God gave children to the families, and the parents were to determine what happened to their children. And then, we can't have child abuse, you know. What about child sexual abuse? I mean, you wouldn't support child sexual abuse. And then, very, very subtly, the term sexual abuse just became child abuse, and child abuse became spanking your child, or punishing your child, or, you know, confining your child, or not letting them go off when they wanted to, not giving them total freedom, not creating social anarchy in the family. And little bit by little bit, they've conditioned the American people to turn their back on, of course, the God-given instruction that the parents were to raise up their children in the way of the Lord. They were to discipline them and to prepare them for life. And, of course, the child is raised in the ways of the Lord is not going to have problems. But, of course, the school does everything they can to destroy the child's faith in God. And then, of course, we wonder why we have a lawless generation and the problems we have today. But I share your concern about this move to create the preschools. And this is really a plan, an organized plan, to get the children into government-controlled education at age 3. So there will be no possibility of bonding with their parents. So there'll be no possibility that they will love God. So there'll be no possibility they'll love country. All these ideas that once were such important parts of our society are to be eroded and destroyed because, of course, our children are being prepared for this wonderful new society that lies ahead with a new world order. the New World Religion, and even in the new program that's coming, being put forward now, No Child Left Behind. If you look at the instruction for that, as Alan Quist has done, and if you haven't heard our interview with him or have our 4-tape set on FedEd or his book on FedEd, you'll find out that what they're really doing is teaching the children religion, but not the religion of the gospel, not the religion of the Bible, but a pagan religion, a pantheistic religion, and that is what is being taught. It's not atheism. This is where people have missed the view. Simply, they have gone beyond atheism from Christianity and Jewish belief into atheism, and now the second shift of the paradigm is into pantheism and, of course, in these occultic beliefs. And they are actually doing that in our schools today. It's part of the curriculum. That's what Earth Day is all about. Do you think Earth Day is just an accident, that it happens to be on Lenin's birthday? Do you think that they had no idea the significance? Why do we celebrate Lenin's birthday in our schools across America? Why did they pick Earth Day? Because this whole idea is a collectivist idea. The whole environmental movement has been described like a watermelon, green on the outside, but red on the inside, which is why, of course, if you go to the communist bookstores, as I have, and you'll see the books there about how I started out as a communist and I became an environmentalist, because this is a vehicle of pushing the revolution. They understand that. It's just too bad the American parents don't. Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Bill Sardi, and we'll invite your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Would like to know what your thoughts are. Are they trying to push these preschools in your area? Believe me, they've done a terrible job with education so far. Let's not let them destroy the rest of education. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Well, Bill, what are your thoughts?
Well, of course, we live in troubled times, and I'm concerned about how all this sounds. You know, the people on the bottom, of course, we're concerned. We're a country that is concerned about people that are trying to get on the first ladder of the rungs of life, and of course, the immigrants coming here are a great concern. And I think on a personal level, all of us would do something for anybody in need, doesn't matter who they are, and people in need. Of course, it creates a tremendous burden when they're coming here in the millions. But how does all this sound to them? To them, it's something, well, you're going to spend $50,000. They don't know where money comes from. It looks like all of us are rich. We have cars and we have houses. And of course, now somebody's going to come and take care of their kids and make sure that their kids are able to compete with the other children and so on. And I realize there's real problems. Maybe something needs to be done. But the issue is, can government fix every problem? And somehow today, we don't understand how far this is going to go. You know, in some European socialist countries, where the taxes are 70% and 80%, they've hardly left anything for anybody to earn and have any incentive left. And is it going to get that far here? We already tax. People don't realize this, but the rich here, we call them the rich, people over probably $50,000 or more income, maybe $50,000, $60,000 in a family or so, income in a year. And those families are taxed, as you look at the federal income taxes, the bottom 50% of the tax returns pay 4% of the taxes. We have a progressive income tax system. Same here in our state, it's similar. And of course, the top 50% pay the other 96% of the taxes, and it's just the top 8 to 12% that pays 70-some percent of all the taxes. So it's the very wealthy who already gets taxed. I see we have this automobile license issue going on in the state of California. And instead of taxing everyone, you see, as they up the automobile registration fee, well, that's going to tax the poor. And that's going to be very burdensome. And I was hoping they would pass it, because then we would finally have taxpayer revolt. Everyone from the lower end to the higher end would be upset. But now the Democrats caught on, realized this would cause great unrest. And, of course, now what they're pushing for is to revamp that and just go back to taxing the rich, which means people who have a little more money are going to be paying for somebody else's car registration. That's how that works out. So, you know, this gets so onerous that's what's happening in the state of California underneath our eyes. They've hidden it from us. Is now the Census Bureau says that if you subtract the immigrants, there's been a mass exit from the state of California, and the people that were living here have left. There's a negative flow of people in our state outward, and of course our population has actually dropped if you subtract the immigration. So that means people are frightened. They're moving away, and those are the very people that bring in the incomes to pay for these onerous social welfare programs. Democrats now run this thing. I can't point it all at them. The Republicans seem to come up with more cures that cost money as well. So I think pointing at parties is we've got to get beyond that. And how in the world we're ever going to be able to take and just throw away reams and reams of government programs, I don't know. It seems like we just keep getting bigger and bigger. And if unemployment gets bad, government will hire them and then more taxes. And government will hire them and then more taxes. So how far do we go?
Well, it's really very interesting. They're talking about laying off some 30,000 state workers here. You know, they're talking really heavy. They're going to have to make cuts because they just don't have the money. And so for the first time, they're going to have to start acting responsibly at the state level. And, of course, those people no longer will have a job. They won't be paying any taxes. They'll be getting unemployment insurance. And, of course, they're going to have all of those salaries no longer out there in the economy, and that slows down the economy, and then, of course, more people get laid off. And this is what happens as you begin moving first into a depression and then, of course, into deflation. And my concern is that we may well begin moving into deflation. Certainly, the prices of homes haven't come down very far, but if all you have to do is look and see what's happening to the price of cars, and, of course, you know, you can buy a car, nothing down, nothing for 6 months, and they give you $5,000 or $10,000 bonus to buy this expensive car because they're desperate to sell them, and there are real problems developing as far as moving items now and the margins of profit.
Go try and buy a Lexus. This is a very exclusive luxury car, and the interest rates on a Lexus from the dealer are around 2-3%, unbelievably low.
Right.
So they're really trying to push cars right now, and of course they know that times are hard. And of course, that's hidden from us. Life looks normal to us, but things aren't normal.
They certainly aren't. And, of course, the one thing that, of course, may very well help to alleviate some of the situation is government is not going to have the money to be able to provide everything. The only way, of course, they can do that is massive inflation. And they know that will really wreck the economy and destroy, of course, the very wealthy class. And that's the last thing the wealthy want. We'll be back in just a moment here and take a call from Mike. They're from Santa Cruz, and welcome your calls, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, I guess, this evening, Bill Sardi, and on the line from Santa Cruz is Mike. Hi, how you doing, Mike?
Hi, Stan. What about Prop 49?
Well, tell me about Proc 49.
That's the one Schwarzenegger's been pushing so hard for so long. It's called the After School Education and Safety Program Act of 2002.
All right. Well, that was really one of the greatest sleight of hands I've ever seen. Because, of course, that proposition was $500
million. $550.
But it wasn't going to raise taxes. It wasn't going to be a bond issue. In fact, that was free money. And, of course, that was the way they sold it to the people of the state of California. And who could, of course, be against helping the children? Mm-hmm. And nobody ever asked, gee, if it's not going to increase taxes and it's not going to got a bond issue, where is the money coming from? Well, it's coming from the general fund. The general fund has lots of money. Only trouble is the general fund doesn't have any money now. So where is that $550 million going to come from? Why, that's going to be coming, it's part of this $38 billion of debt. And Arnold Schwarzenegger did it for the children.
Yeah, for the
children. And I think, I have to ask myself, what is the real force behind Arnold Schwarzenegger? Because, of course, he was pandering at that time, preparing to run for political office. But we find that he's on the wrong side on every moral issue. This is not a responsible fiscal thing to do. He says it's a fiscal conservative, and yet he sold the people of the state of California. I'm going to come up with $550 million, and it's not going to cost you a cent.
It's $550 per year.
Right.
He's a socialist. I think one statement of his was very telling. It was the day after he announced his candidacy. He was talking to, this is a major statement to the media in general, children are the greatest resource for our state, the greatest resource for our government.
All right,
that's August 8th, 2003.
What are your thoughts on what Mike is saying?
Well, of course, we're using our own people here. Unless our own people stand up, then, as I say, if you're on the bottom, this all sounds good to you. If you're a social worker, this sounds good. You know, I've learned that social workers kind of see, hey, their job's going to go if their number of cases they've got isn't full. So they find people to fill in. That's what I was saying. We were taking care of foster children and realized they were being put into the program just to keep the jobs of the social workers. So they were taking away the kids illegally because they knew they were immune from any prosecution. And so this is the kind of thing, unless you've got a lot of money, so they're going to pick on the poor, and you can get an attorney, you get away with these things. So this is the real tough part of this whole thing, is the people on the bottom are getting picked on and getting helped at the same time.
Well, of course, they have to convince them they're getting help, but in the ultimate, they'll destroy their families and their children. And Mike, have anything else to say?
Interestingly, the League of Women Voters has come out against Prop 49, as well as the American Federation of Teachers. That's fun.
Well, I think, of course, the reason for that, Mike, was League of Women Vipers and the American Federation of Teachers was afraid this was going to take money away from them, and they're absolutely right. Isn't it wonderful?
At least somebody can come out against it.
Right. Okay, thanks so much.
All right.
And remember, Mike, it was for the children.
Yeah, it's always for, hey,
it's always, you know, for the children.
Prop 10 is primarily morning programs, right? Is that... Well,
yeah, Prop 10 are either morning preschool or in-home visitation programs. That's what they're trying to do.
And the Prop 49 is K-9 after school. So they got us coming and going.
Yeah. Now, of course, so, is Prop 10, did that pass, or where is it?
No, it is passed. It's the smokers' tax money. And so now that they found the money, then they had these programs right away. And you brought up the point that they're trying to lay off 30,000 state employees. Remember that when Gray Davis took office, as a deal with the union, so they could have more money coming in from the dues that they collect, he hired 40,000 new workers in the state. He's laid off 10,000. He's got to retrench now. He's looking bad in front of the very people that paid him off to be there. And of course, he added $8 billion to the state budget by doing this. So this is the problem that we have, is Gray Davis set us up for this fall by, of course, hiring all these people and putting them in union jobs. And the unions loved it, of course. And now the whole estate is falling for it. Understand, this was all done at a time when the income in the state was increased by 25%. Just imagine, your business increased 25% in money coming in, and you still could not balance the budget.
Well, he actually increased spending by about 40% in the 4 years he was in office. And you have to understand, when we're considering we're dealing with $100 billion budget, which was what would have been this year, was his $38 billion deficit came from his massive increase in spending. He had a $12 billion surplus when he went in. Now we have a $38 billion deficit. And of course, California, as either the fifth or sixth largest economy in the world, some people say we've sunk to seventh largest economy in the entire world. If California was an independent state, we would be the fifth, sixth, or seventh largest economy. We were at one time the fifth largest economy in the world. I mean, just right behind, Germany and Japan and China, and we would have been then right behind China probably as the largest economy in the world. And of course, this is sinking and sinking fast, and we're in real trouble. And of course, America is a bellwether for the rest of the nation. And, of course, it would be wonderful if we would be able to say, well, you know, this is just a temporary downturn. Things are going to get better. But they have intentionally shipped our industry offshore. And, of course, they are now in the process of shipping our white-collar jobs offshore. Didn't you tell me that Bank of America is moving its loan department to India?
I'm not sure it was me who told you. I think you had mentioned it though in a previous discussion, and certainly there are certain aspects of many of these corporations. As the other day I was on the phone asking someone, are you in India calling me, or where are you from? Because it just didn't sound right to me. And of course, they're able to hire labor and service workers and people who can work on computers a lot cheaper in these foreign countries. So we've got to wonder about where we're going to find our employment now these days and where that's going.
They're offshoring more and more of our jobs. And then, of course, they have these special visa permits to bring in people from India and Bangladesh who will work for a third of what Americans will work for and be happy to be here working for it. So really, of course, we are not going to have the industrial capacity that we've had. We're not going to have the white-collar jobs. And increasingly, of course, we're seeing a situation developing where our major industry is our service industry. Certainly our industrial base is not growing, but our service industry is doing fine. People cutting your hair. People, of course, mowing your lawn. People are doing landscaping for you, or you're doing it for other people. But, of course, no country can maintain itself without actually wealth production. And wealth production is industrial production, mining, farming, and fishing. And you take those things away, and, of course, what do you have? Why you have a third world nation, and America's well on the way to becoming one. Well, Bill, let's talk just a little bit about, of course, some of the things that you've been working with as far as healthcare and, of course, the new products that you've been talking about that really are designed to help people with specific problems. Do you want to just spend a few minutes talking about that?
Well, I think in healthcare today, the area that I like to specialize in, the area I've been in, and, of course, at my website, askbillsardi.com, and you're welcome to go there after you visit the Radio Liberty website, but support Radio Liberty first because you won't get to hear any of this. We like to share free things here on the air about health and nutrition and ways to stay healthy without running to the doctor for everything. God bless our doctors when we break a leg or needed our teeth fixed or a cataract removed. You know, they're there to do it for us, but somebody said it's just those three technologies only that have really been proven. The rest of the technologies in medicine are rather questionable, and of course, we wonder. So when we look at so many things in the last few years, there are many medical technologies now under review, and we find out in particular hormone replacement therapy, for example. I just have a fresh new report on my website. So if women are concerned about hormone replacement therapy, they can go there and download my report, and we talk to you about hormone replacement therapy, its failures, how it was a giant experiment promoted on American women for so long without any evidence that it worked. And the doctors told us, and even today I am told, that women will not take anything and let their doctors say so, even though their doctors misled them for the last 20 years. They will not move, they will not budge until their doctor says to do something. So hormone replacement therapy now falling into disfavor and possibly even increasing risks of health problems, just slightly, but nonetheless, we were misled by this. And then what are our alternatives? New alternatives are coming up. Are you going to go for those, which are unproven, or are you going to try some of the natural remedies?
Well, it was very interesting. I got a call from a friend of mine. I won't mention his name, but I said, how are you doing? He said, see, I'm doing so much better. You know, 4 months ago, I was having angina, having a lot of chest pain. And then, of course, I tried chelation. Then I got on to Bill Sardi's material and things he was advising me to do. And then I've got off of chelation. And, gee, I'm feeling so much better. My chest pain is gone, and I just feel like a different person. And I said, well, did Bill really help you? And he said, he sure did. So obviously your advice is having an impact on people and really changing their lives.
Well, there's so many wonderful things here that are simple. And if somebody's going to think I'm selling them something now when I tell you the story I got back on the Internet from Deanne Packman. I hope she doesn't mind me using her name on the air. But she shared with me on the Internet that she had a cholesterol count of 317, it's supposed to be around 200 or so, triglycerides of 2,216, wow, that's supposed to be around 200 or less, and her LDL bad cholesterol was so high the machine could not read it. So she went to the website, she read my report on cholesterol, it's a three-part thing, she started taking the fish oil and tocotrienols, it's a form of vitamin E, and magnesium, and boron, and taurine, and coenzyme Q10, and lecithin. All these things we talk about, she writes that after 2 months she was able to stop taking one of the blood pressure pills. Her cholesterol drops from 317 to 124. Her triglycerides from 2,216 to 313 her LDL cholesterol within the normal range. She writes to say thank you. She said, you're a blessing to me. God's used you to save my life. Well, of course, we're just making ourselves available. There's nothing to sell here. I'm just telling you there's free information at my website. You can go there. There's no hooks. There's no strings. And we've written a wonderful report on cholesterol. We have this new one on hormone replacement therapy. And we actually unveil the real cause of breast cancer there. It's been hidden from us for years and years and years. As women approach menopause, the amount of breast cancer before menopause is only 1.5% of the cases. Afterwards, it's the majority, vast majority of cases. And why? Has nothing to do per se with estrogen. We have our lowest estrogen levels in menopause. Why, when we had, when women were pregnant or had much higher estrogen levels, didn't they get breast cancer then? Because estrogen's not the real culprit in breast cancer. It's involved. It's there. It's one of the players. But the real culprit is iron. And as soon as women stop menstruating and controlling their iron, they're either donating their iron to their babies or they're menstruating and losing it once a month. Once they lose that iron control, that's when the risk of breast cancer goes way up. And that's when women need to be careful. And, of course, we promote things like crushed flax seeds, flaxseed meal. We list products and things there for you. I don't sell any of them. They're just there. That's information for you. And, of course, how to beat the rap on breast cancer. I know a lot of women want to know that had the problem. Well, how do we beat this? It all has to do with the problem of iron. And so it's just a little lesson for us all as I unveil the real problem, the real trigger of breast cancer has to do with iron. The very start of breast cancer is when iron's out of control. It causes a DNA mutation, and that starts the whole thing. So.
Well, you know, it was, everybody's ever read the story of Robin Hood, remember that, Robin Hood was bled, and that was one of the ancient methods of treatment. And in fact, even George Washington would get bled from time to time. And really, that was a very efficient means of getting rid of iron, wasn't it?
It was, and of course we just didn't recognize it as the world kind of goes back to these old technologies that were recognized long ago. And of course, anemia is not a wonderful state to be in, but God makes women pale and tired and slightly anemic to protect them from disease because by women not having a lot of iron. Iron promotes the growth of tumors, bacteria, viruses, funguses, so just about everything going grows from iron, and of course that's how our babies grow. So you make the women slightly anemic so that they don't grow any of the bad stuff, but when they have the babies they can grow those, and then we put the growth hormones in, and the sex hormones and the estrogen go way up, and of course we grow babies, and so that's when all that happens. So we need to learn the universal facts of life. At age 40, women have half the iron levels of a man at that age, and have half the amounts of or levels of breast cancer, of all cancer, and diabetes and heart disease. So we have to learn the lesson of iron. Women have lower iron levels till they reach menopause. Then as they start to build the iron levels up, they have the same level of disease as men. Women have lower iron levels to start with, so they live 8 to 12 years longer than men and so on. So these are universal facts that are being hidden from us.
Now, of course, you've written a book on that called, what is it, The Iron Time Bomb?
The Iron Time Bomb, which tries to explain that they tell us hemochromatosis, the iron overload disease, is genetic, that actually it's universal. Everyone's going to get into this problem. So these are the issues. Now, to solve some of these problems, I know this all gets very confusing. What do I do? Where do I go for something that keeps healthy cholesterol levels? What do I do when I need to control my blood pressure to keep that in a healthy range? You know, we started a whole new line of food supplements called Health at Home Nutrition. We're going to send a free newspaper out to everybody telling them how to stay healthy at home. Free tips along with these new product lines so you don't have to be confused. All in one bottle instead of taking 5 or 10 food supplements. You can learn about how to do that. I'm just learning myself because as healthy as I live, I'm learning that, my gosh, I've got a little gallbladder problem. And so I'm cleansing my gallbladder. We're going to share with you how to do that. A lot of you folks don't realize you've got a gallbladder problem because you're having trouble eating fats and oils and things like that. And when you have that indigestion and that pain and so on, you don't realize you're just starting to have a gallbladder problem. You can cleanse your gallbladder. Now, for the folks listening that want to learn about that, they can call 866-405-4000. get on the list. Eventually, all of you are going to get a free videotape from me on how to stay healthy at home. It's a free videotape, and all the folks that sign up for that, 866-405-4000, they can call for that, and maybe be a little confused there. If you want to call a different number during the workday's hours, it's 800-247-5731. Leave your name and number there, 800-247-5731, and they can answer your questions personally, or you can leave a number there. But those are a couple numbers you can use, and of course we're trying to 800-247-5731, and we're going to give away some great information on how to stay healthy at home so you don't have to run to the doctor all the time.
All right, fine. And of course, if you'd like to get that free newsletter, and I guess down the line you're going to be getting a free video, why, I give Bill a call, and his information really is rather fascinating. And where can people get your books? Because I know that you've written The Power of Healing, The Power of God, The Iron Time Bomb, How to Live to Be 100 Years of Age, and we've got half a dozen of your books here.
Oh, yes, and I like my new book, The New Truth About Vitamins and Minerals. Frankly, a lot of people aren't book readers, but for those people that are and love to read this stuff or lifelong vitamin supplement users, you'll want to get my new book, The New Truth About Vitamins and Minerals, and so on. Now, that's all at a little website called hereandnowbooks.com, hereandnowbooks.com. And, of course, that's fun for the folks. I'm trying to give it away here on the radio. We have limited time. We're going to try and put it all on videotape. A lot of folks have a little trouble reading or maybe even poor eyesight or whatever, so they love it on a videotape or something where they can hear it. So that's what we're going to be doing for folks and trying to help them along sort out all these confusing issues about health. I think probably the two most confusing things in modern life are working with computers and walking into health food stores. Probably the third one is all the religions in the world. So, boy, it's hard to sort all that stuff out. We try to do the health part of it. And,
well, they can't solve all the problems of the world for people.
Well, we can't here, but we do. I tell you what, the Internet has given us a great access, and we research things for people. A lot of people email me through my website, askbillsardi.com. They say, a relative has this problem. I go research it for them. We get some answers back to them. I don't have to have all the answers, but they're out there somewhere. And it just takes a trained researcher, of course, to understand the medical literature and get answers to people. So it's fun helping people, and it's fun giving yourself away, and, of course, seeing people get better because, frankly, we couldn't do anything better for people, and the world's getting to be a smaller place. We really need to help each other out.
Amen to that. Well, Bill, we're just about out of time. It's always fascinating. So let's, once again, the website is
askbillsardi.com. Yeah, I gave out an earlier number, but the best phone number to reach for the free newspaper and the videotape, 800-247-5731. And then if you want to learn about the books, hereandnowbooks.com, and I'll let you all visit there after you visit Radio Liberty, and, of course, support Radio Liberty.
God bless you. Well, thank you so very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And this has been Bill Sardi, and I hope you enjoyed the program. And if you go to Bill's website, I think you'll find fascinating, fascinating material there that will really help you better to understand the problems that face the people of our country today. And, I can remember when I was just a resident at the University of California Hospital, and they were just getting around to recommending estrogen for women, and of course they were saying it protected against breast carcinoma. Well, I actually, of course, had a woman who was in that original study, and of course they put her on estrogen. She had breast carcinoma. Maybe she had it beforehand. I don't know whether she did or not. But anyway, she had a great big, rapidly growing breast carcinoma. They just threw her out of the study and continued the study. And then they said, oh, now, of course, we know how to help women. We want to put them on hormones, estrogen, because it decreases the incidence of breast carcinoma. And, of course, so much of this is simply fraudulent. It's based upon the studies that are financed by the major drug companies. And for years we're told one thing is absolutely the only way to do things, and then 10 years later, 20 years later, why, of course, well, we never should have done that, but now we've got something that's even better. And, the problem is that so much of what's going on today is mediated by the major drug companies that have a vested financial interest in pushing products. And then, of course, they have their detail men go around to talk to the doctors. And if there are problems with these various medications, why they are not discussed in the medical journals. Now, eventually when it becomes so obvious that something is so flagrant, that eventually, of course, it does get in the medical journals, but they will do everything they can to keep them out of the medical journals, to keep them from being discussed at medical meetings. And there have been many people for many years who've known that there were problems as far as hormones were concerned. And, of course, one of the things that they've done is, well, of course, the normal cholesterol was always 230. It was 230 from as far as back as I can remember. But, of course, most people did not have high cholesterol, so they had to talk the doctors into lowering it from 230 down to 200. And they could say, well, then, if you've got 225, why, you need a Lipitor, you need this or that, one of our cholesterol-lowering medications. And they had one, of course, they gave to I don't know how many 100,000 people that had terrible, terrible lethal effects and caused myolysis, in other words, dissolving in the muscles, all sorts of problems. And, of course, they left that on the market and left it on the market until there was just no way that they could possibly, leave it on any longer, and now they pulled it off the market. But since it had been authorized by the FDA, why, many of these people are going to have a very, very difficult time in bringing lawsuits against the people who put out a drug that had not been adequately tested. They've done the same thing over and over and over again with our vaccines. The original polio vaccine, released back in 1955, they knew killed monkeys. They knew it created a paralysis in monkeys, and they released the Cutter vaccine anyway. The story is told in a wonderful book called The Health Century. Actually, it's produced under the auspices of the National Institute of Health. Health Century by Dr. Edward Shorter is must reading, because then after, first, they put out the Cutter vaccine, the polio vaccine, the Salk vaccine, and then 5 years later it was found that there was a cancer virus in it, simian virus 40. Well, you couldn't tell the American people that. They've kept that secret all these years. But that is, of course, one of the most dangerous cancer viruses. In fact, the whole idea of decoding the human genome really came from decoding the genome of the SV40 cancer virus that we infected 100 million Americans with. And they left that on the market until they could come up with a Sabin vaccine. But they never bothered to check the Sabin vaccine, which was now grown in green monkeys and has had all the monkey side of metallic viruses, and we got all of those. And rather than try to find a means of producing a safe vaccine, why, of course, the commercial interest outweighed the general health. And they say, you know, it's terrible. People are losing confidence in science. In England, you know that a large number of parents are refusing to have their children vaccinated. They have to trust the scientists. They just got to trust them. And I would say that when the scientists lie to the public, they don't deserve our trust. And the story of the polio vaccine has been repeated over and over again. And, of course, now you've seen the incidence of autism in children going from 1 in 10,000 to 1 in between 150 and 1 in 250 children, and probably related to the thimerosal, the mercury that they knew was in there. They knew was toxic. And, of course, where were the scientists there to protect us? Well, now, of course, they're taking the thimerosal out of all the vaccines, except, of course, for the influenza vaccine. And we're going to give that to older people because, after all, that really doesn't matter. But we're also going to recommend it for the children as well. Toxic doses of mercury in the influenza, which is being recommended by the CDC for every child to take. Why would they do something that stupid unintentionally? Well, we have a very, very difficult time realizing there really are evil and wicked people out there. In fact, let me just conclude with something that a man named Elie Wiesel had written in a book called One Generation After 1970. And of course, Elie Wiesel, as a child of 10, had been in the Nazi concentration camps and seen his family killed. And here's what he wrote. Spring of 1945. Emerging from the nightmare, the world discovers the camps, the death factory, the senseless horror, the debasement, the absolute reign of evil. Victory tastes of ashes. Yes, it is possible to defile life and creation and feel no remorse, to tend one's garden and water one's flowers, but two steps away from barbed wire, to experiment with monstrous mutations and still believe in the soul and immortality. There was then a technique, a science of murder, complete with specialized laboratories, business meetings, and progress charts. Those engaged in its practice didn't belong to a gutter society of misfits, nor could they be dismissed as just a collection of rabble. Many held degrees in philosophy, sociology, biology, general medicine, psychiatry, and the fine arts. There were lawyers among them, and unthinkable but true, theologians. And ladies and gentlemen, that happened, of course, during the Second World War. But I don't think, of course, that the mentality of many of the scientists in Hitler's Germany is any different than the scientists in America, because we had here in America from 1932 to 1972 the Tuskegee study, where they intentionally took a black man with syphilis and withheld treatment from them for 40 years. Out of the 400 blacks that they recruited, most of them died as a result of their experiment, which they carried out. And of course, the purpose was to have them die so they could autopsy them. And what was ever done to the people who perpetrated that? Absolutely nothing. Well, those of you who subscribe to our newsletter will get, of course, our July-August newsletter that tells you what's really going on in America since the end of the Second World War. If you don't subscribe to our newsletter, we hope that many of you will give serious consideration. The newsletter will be posted on the Internet at RadioLiberty.com in just a few weeks, the July-August newsletter. If you'd like to know about joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, where you get our newsletter and, of course, you get certainly our four best tapes of the month, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then, of course, we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival. We ask you to pray for our leaders and for our ministers. But we ask you to remember to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow evening, when we'll be back with you once again, this is Dr. Stan saying goodbye. May the Lord be with you. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we always welcome your calls from out across America here at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And, of course, we'd love to hear your calls, and you don't have to agree with us. You have a perfect right, of course, to call us and tell us what you think, what you believe. But right now, of course, we want you to hold your calls. Hopefully, we're going to have with us Brad Dacus. And Talking about, of course, what's happening on the legal front. He's from the Pacific Justice Institute. And, of course, we hope to have Randy Thomason from the Campaign for California Families. And we let's see if we've got right now on the line with us is Randy Thomason. Hi, Randy. How are you doing?
Hello, Dr. Stan. I'm doing well. Lots to keep track of.
All right. Well, tell us what's going on now. For our listeners out there, Randy, of course, is there in Sacramento. He is a Christian lobbyist. He represents, I believe, what the people of California really want, at least the God-fearing people. He works for his own organization, and which is, of course, funded by people who are concerned about the moral degeneracy that is permeating every aspect of our society. So tell us how the battle is going up there and the den of vipers there in Sacramento.
Well, I'd like to talk about two things. One is the election, and the other is legislation. And first, legislation. Well, actually, let's go to the recall, because that's on people's minds, isn't it?
Right.
It really is, and there's expected to be, definitely over 100 candidates on the ballot. And, of course, there are only about six major candidates on the Democrat side, Bustamante, on the Republican side, McClintock, Simon, Schwarzenegger, and Uberoth, and then a minor candidate or an independent candidate, Arianna Huffington, and probably the largest support for a small third ring party, if you will, would be Peter Camejo of the Green Party. But really, we're talking only of six really notable candidates, and that's where the main fight is going to be, obviously.
All right, fine. Of course, we have two well-known conservatives, or at least one well-known conservative, Tom McClintock. Then we have Bill Simon, who claims to be a conservative. And then, of course, we have Arnold Schwarzenegger, and I'm not quite certain what he is. The thing is, it's, of course, the person who gets the most votes is going to win. So you could actually win this election with 20% of the vote or 21% of the vote and become the next governor of the state of California. This is the most incredible time. What is that, the old saying? This is the best of times, the worst of times.
Yes.
An age of wisdom and age of incredulity.
It really is. And you know, in the movies, since Arnold is running, and I've noticed on satellite TV, there's all these Arnold Schwarzenegger movies now being played this week. I wonder if that has anything to do with the California election. I think so. But in the best novels and movies, it's the people who basically are under significant trials, significant battles, personal or external, and they rise to the occasion, and their character shows brightly when they rise above their circumstances and basically make a difference, shining the light in a very dark situation. And the California recall election has been called a circus. It's been called a carnival. I don't really call it that. I call it a serious war about values. This is not a war fought with guns, knives, or bullets. This is a war that's civilized, fighting for some basic structures and moral values for families. And those of you who know me know that I stand for marriage, and I stand for the principles that support the basic unit of family. And as such, we need to understand that it is proven that a child is best served by being in a married household with a mother and a father. So protecting the institution, the rights, the benefits of marriage is very important. And then also having a solid policy on adoption is important. And I want to speak briefly to two major candidates, Arnold Schwarzenegger and Cruz Bustamante. Arnold Schwarzenegger, says he supports abortion. He says he's, quote, pro-choice. And we're assuming no limits on that. Would he support tax funding of abortion? That's what Cruz Bustamante supports. What about the homosexual agenda? Well, Arnold Schwarzenegger is widely reported to support homosexual adoptions, placing children into households with homosexual sex partners. Now, that is something that's beyond what Gray Davis has even said publicly, although Gray Davis has a homosexual adoption policy internally. Cruz Bustamante, the Democrat, he is on record, Dr. Stan, with the homosexual activist groups as supporting homosexual marriage, that bill AB 205 we talked about, and then also supporting punishing business owners with $150,000 fines if they don't hire a transsexual job applicant, a cross-dresser, a man wearing a woman's dress, for example. That's Cruz Bustamante for you. And people need to know those things.
Well, but as Arnold Schwarzenegger, what's his position?
We don't know. A lot of it is mysterious. I was called by a major newspaper today to talk about Arnold Schwarzenegger, and you know, it's interesting. On the one hand, he's got all these shoot 'em up movies full of tons of blood and gore, but in his private life, he reaches out to developmentally disabled children through the Special Olympics. I really am concerned about what he might do as governor when we look at the policy on adoption, when we look at also the size of government. Arnold Schwarzenegger said at his first news conference after announcing on The Tonight Show, he said that we need to bring businesses back to California, but then he really made it clear because he said we need businesses bring in the revenues for all these things. He was talking about government social programs in the previous breath.
Well, of course, I pointed out in the last hour that Arnold had come up with this initiative that passed last election for this $550 million to be spent on after-school programs for the children. And it's always for the children, for the children, for the children. And of course, it wasn't going to cost any money. It wasn't going to raise taxes. It wasn't going to be a bond issue. The money was just going to mysteriously appear, and it was going to be there. It was going to come out of the general fund. That's obvious, you know. And so we didn't have to pay it. It came out of the general fund. And he sold that to the people of California. You know, you wonder, of course, some people have said, is there intelligent life on other planets? And I would reply, well, is there really intelligent life in California?
Yeah, and you're pushing a button with me, Dr. Stan. One of the things that has disturbed me the most in the past week is the idolatry that I've been seeing. Idolatry is worshiping something other than God. It's treating a man as God. And I think I saw that, the adulation of Arnold Schwarzenegger as people were just seeing it, sign this. This was celebrity-focused. This was an entertainer that is running for governor, and it was worship in the sense of that I've heard of people. Some of my staff members have reported to me that people are registering to vote just so they can vote for Arnold Schwarzenegger, not being concerned about where he stands on any issues, but they think he's going to do good in Sacramento, as he said, I'm going to pump up Sacramento, whatever that means. But if people will flock after someone who promises some peace of some sort or some stability of some sort without knowing what that person, that leader, really, really believes, then how easy would it be for people in the future to just flock after the Antichrist who's predicted to come promising peace? Of course, it'll only be temporary.
Well, of course, you know Arnold is from Austria. The German people accepted a man from Austria back in the 1930s. Now, I'm not suggesting it's the same thing, but, of course, Adolf Hitler did everything. It was always for the people and for the children. And, of course, you know, he was a great leader, and the people swarmed behind him. And, you know, the thing is, what we are seeing today, in my estimation, is something that's been planned for a long time. I mean, this whole idea of staging the announcement for the Jay Leno show, this is show business at its utmost, with the full backing of the Hollywood crowd or radical leftists. So, I mean, I would love to believe that Arnold Schwarzenegger was going to act fiscally responsibly and, of course, morally responsibly, and I don't see any evidence of it. If he would push a $550 million program for after-school programs for the children and convince the people of the state of California that that was free money, it wasn't going to raise our taxes, it wasn't going to create a bond issue. So where is the money going to come from this year, now that it's part of our state constitution?
Yeah, good question. I see Arnold Schwarzenegger as a little bit to the right of Dick Reardon and way to the left of Tom McClintock. And you mentioned McClintock and Simon. McClintock is the stronger and more articulate conservative, making a name for himself as a taxpayer advocate, and he's the acknowledged leader in the state legislature for defending taxpayers. And, you know, people are going to have to follow, if you want to vote pro-family, you're going to have to follow one of them, McClintock or Simon. I think that Tom McClintock has more pro-family credentials in his 19 years in the legislature, in his voting record. So it's going to be very, very interesting.
All right, fine. Well, what's the other thing you want to bring up now? We've got Rand waiting on the line, waiting over there in the wings to come on. So there was another item you wanted to talk about.
Yes, well, and something that Brad opposes as well is this homosexual marriage bill, AB 205. And this is something to continue calling Governor Gray Davis to urge him to oppose AB 205. When I'm called by reporters today and asked what's the status of this bill, they know that the governor's watching the phone calls. So please take down this number, call Gray Davis. His number is 916-445-2841, 916-445-2841. Leave a message and urge Gray Davis to veto AB 205, the gay marriage bill that rejects the vote of the people. Say it just like that. More information on our website, SaveCalifornia.com.
SaveCalifornia.com. God bless you, Randy. We'll
Thank
talk
you,
to you next
time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, fine. And so let's go now to our good friend, Brad Dacus from the Pacific Justice Institute. Hi, Brad. How's the battle for preserving Christianity going on the legal field?
Well, right now, in fact, I've stepped out of a city hall meeting. We're in the process of defending a church. There's so many churches that are prevented from being able to be in different communities. I think we're making major headway there, but we did have a step backwards. One of our affiliate attorneys argued in the case for the state Supreme Court, and the state Supreme Court voted 6-1, unfortunately, to declare that, and I don't want to be too technical here, but they declared basically that that second parents don't need to be, for someone to be a second parent adoption, in other words, for someone to come in and be declared a parent who wasn't a parent before, that they don't have to be married to them, you know. And in the past, they had to be married in a committed marriage relationship, you know. If they marry someone who has children in order to be the father, now they could be shacking up, they could be living together. Technically, I mean, theoretically, you could have the entire baseball team adopt someone and all be declared their dad, the dad of someone. So it just opens the door to turmoil and instability, and it does so to children who are being adopted who already come from so much instability. States like Texas and others across the country are just laughing at us for the insanity of this decision and the cruelty that it's going to give to many children being adopted.
Well, I appreciate the fact you're on the front lines, and I think that, once again, we see that they infiltrated our courts many, many years ago. They put people there who had a different agenda, who had a different worldview. And, of course, as we approach what I believe is a crisis, a moral crisis in our society, why I think that the true colors of many of the members of the judiciary are coming forward. Who is the one Supreme Court judge who voted against it, do you know?
That was Justice Janice Brown.
Well, of course, she is certainly the only bright light we have there on the state Supreme Court.
I think she is, and I have a personal prediction. I think we'll see her on the U.S. Supreme Court before George W. Bush leaves office. That's my prediction. So,
I hope and pray that you're right. I'm not as optimistic as you are, but maybe you're right, and let's just hope and pray, because God can do anything he really wants to. But, of course, he's not going to restore our courts until, of course, we've destroyed the soul of America, and that has to start with one person at a time.
Absolutely. We're filing a writ for rehearing on this one, but bottom line, we don't get discouraged. We move ahead, and we've got a lot of exciting things pending before the Ninth Circuit, and we'll hopefully see some victories in the coming months. So.
Okay, well, let's get your website out there so you can get back into that meeting.
You bet. It's pacificjustice.org. That's pacificjustice.org, pacificjustice.org, and they can sign up there. You get our case updates, press releases, You know, we're actively in the field, seen a lot of progress, and we'd love to share with people, so just feel free to take a look.
Okay, God bless you. Thanks so much, Brad.
Thank you, Dr. Stanley.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, fine. Well, that was Brad Tagus from the Pacific Justice Foundation, and you can go up to his website, and, of course, they got great information. Well, now we're going to get our good friend John Spring on. And John is a geographer and has a very, very good grasp of what's going on over in the Middle East. And, you know, we hear every day another one or two Americans is killed. And, of course, the boys, of course, are getting ill over there. What we have done, of course, is saturate that entire area with depleted uranium. And, of course, we know what happened, of course, in Kuwait after the first Gulf War, with about 20% of the population is ill. And probably much of this is related to depleted uranium and an extremely toxic substance. You can go up on the website and, of course, look up depleted uranium, get some of Dr. Rocky's material. If you go to the Royal Society over in London, and this is a very, very conservative medical organization, the Royal Society, of course, is very, very concerned about depleted uranium, but the government keeps saying, oh, there's absolutely nothing to worry about. Well, of course, they told us that about the Gulf War syndrome. I mean, they told us that about Agent Orange. They told us, they concealed the truth about the Tuskegee study. A government, by its very essence, lies to the American people. And when are the American people going to get angry and demand, of course, of the people who lie to us, certainly are, something is done about them? Do you remember the story about, of course, the fact that Saddam sent agents over to Niger to try to buy a yellow uranium, a box of yellow uranium so he could build a bomb? And then it turned out it was all a lie. And, of course, what else are they lying about? Well, just about everything that's going on today. And, of course, they're not telling us the truth about what happened on September 11th because, of course, we can't, of course, let that information out for national security purposes. And that's the same reason we're still concealing what happened at Pearl Harbor. And do you realize that much of the information about what happened at Pearl Harbor over 64 years ago, December 62 years ago now, on December 7th, 1941, that is still classified in the name of national security. How many of you honestly believe that has anything to do with national security? Or is it that they want the American people to know that we left those boys there to die? As a justification for getting us into a war with Adolf Hitler had been financed not only before the war, but even during the war, by American corporations, and that book is covered certainly in the book Rule by Secrecy, Hope of the Wicked, both of which we carry, but another book which is called Trading with the Enemy, which we don't, is no longer available, but Trading with the Enemy, a fascinating, fascinating book into how American corporations traded with the enemy, with Adolf Hitler all during the war. And not only that, but of course General Motors and Ford Motor Company, their factories were operating in Hitler's Germany. They were making profits. They were, of course, using slave labor, but they don't want the American people to know that because that might give us a jaded view towards Ford and General Motors to know that they were cooperating fully with the Nazis. We have a wonderful book called, of course, Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler. If you haven't read it, you should. And, of course, when the American planes were over there bombing Germany, why, of course, they specifically did not bomb General Motors and Ford and other American plants. They just bombed the German plants so that at the end of the war, our industries would be predominant. You see, nothing is as it appears to be. Reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. Well, with us on the line right now is John Spring. Hi, John. How are we doing?
Real fine, Dr. Stan. Thank you again for inviting me to be on your program tonight.
Well, tell us a little bit about your take on what's going on over there. I think that, you know, every day another couple of boys are killed, and of course, I'm sure many of them are being wounded. My understanding is that the morale is terrible, that the families are furious. The boys were promised they'd come home in July. And then they were promised they'd come home in August. And then they were promised they'll come home in September. And of course, what I'm hearing, from what I'm reading, is the families are furious here. The wives are threatening to demonstrate. And in Washington, D.C., they don't quite know what to do because they have our forces all throughout the rest of the world. And so they're even talking about calling up new National Guard units so that they can, and these are kids with no training at all, and sending them over there into the meat grinder just so they can rotate the troops home so they won't have a mutiny. What's your understanding?
Well, first of all, I admire the commanding officers of the combat units over in Iraq at this time who are actually jeopardizing and risking their careers with the military because they are speaking out to the media about the fact that their troops are overdue for a trip home to the States, and they have not been rotated out of that area as promised several months back. When the officers have the courage to speak out in that manner because they're concerned about their men, you know that the morale must be at a very low level.
Well, I can remember when Bill Clinton promised the American people that we would bring our boys home from Bosnia by November. And I don't know how many people remember that, but I do. Our boys will be coming home by November. He just didn't say November of what year. They're still there.
That's the unfortunate truth of the situation. And I think our troops are going to be there for quite some time unless there are some positive changes that take place.
Well, I think that's always been the plan, was permanently station our troops in the Middle East. And for anybody who questions that, I suggest you go to the website, newamericancentury.org. That's newamericancentury.org. The report on rebuilding America's defenses, you need to read it and read it very carefully. It was put out in September of the year 2000. They talked about the necessity of stationing American troops permanently in the Middle East. And of course, the requirement transcends the regime of Saddam Hussein. In other words, it doesn't matter whether Saddam is there or not. We need our troops stationed in the Middle East. That's what it's all about, but of course, they can't tell the American people. They might catch on to the fact that this war was never fought for the reasons we were told it was fought.
Yes, and I'm glad you brought that out, because that gives me an opportunity to share a few ideas with you and the listening audience. First of all, staging areas to invade Afghanistan while it was still under the Taliban occurred well in advance of 9/11. And one thing about 9/11 that has never been brought out to the American public, one of my guests on one of my recent radio programs, Eric Hauschmidt, who's a computer scientist, did a copious amount of research and concluded that the steel structure of those buildings were far stronger than the reinforced concrete of the Empire State Building, and each of those planes crashing into the respective towers was created very minimal damage, so minimal that if that were the only damage, that those buildings could have been repaired and by now renovated, and all of the office space would be active as ever, basically. But he concluded from his studies that a series of small explosive charges were placed throughout those buildings, as well as Building 7, and they were programmed to go off in a certain order on a computer program. Now, perhaps that's speculation on his part, but when you consider how the buildings fell and how strong structural steel is, of that particular design, you begin to question what really did occur.
Well, I don't think that diesel fuel burns hot enough to have melted those steel pillars in the very, very center. And
correct.
Of course, there is a very serious question as to why the government would not allow any of the investigators to see any of the steel, why it was immediately chopped up and sent off to China. And of course, anybody who wanted to try to investigate this, and there were people actually appointed to investigate it, were never allowed to actually see the structural steel You know, and it was all there. And it's so reminiscent of what happened at Oklahoma City when, of course, the defense was never allowed to go and inspect the ruins of the Murrah building to find out if indeed there had been explosive charges placed on the major pillars that were responsible for the way that the building came down. And there are people who, of course, if you've ever read Charles Key's report, it's very obvious that there were explosive charges there. And that's why they couldn't allow anybody to inspect them, because there would have been residual. And then the American people would have found out that who was really responsible for killing 168 Americans. And had that happened, why, of course, there probably never would have been a September 11th.
Yes. To this day, I honestly do not know who was responsible for that. Hypothetically, it could have been any world power or any terrorist group with the state of art of terrorism to the level that it's evolved. It could have. There are many possibilities.
But why, if there was a terrorist group or if it was some foreign country, why would our government be concealing for them? That would be the question. Why would they be concealing for somebody else? You would think that they would want to point a finger at them and, of course, punish them for killing 3,000 Americans.
You would think so. Then there's a part of our government that, as you have pointed out so many times and in your book, The Brotherhood of Darkness, that we don't fully understand. Without going too much into that at this time, there are some other things that come to my mind. Even prior to the staging of the invasion into Afghanistan, it's interesting to note that Dr. Condoleezza Rice, before she became National Security Advisor, had been working with Chevron to more or less negotiate with the Central Asian governments throughout Central Asia. Most of those leaders were Marxists and spoke Russian fluently, and I imagine Dr. Rice speaks Russian reasonably well, since she did major in Soviet and Russian studies, primarily. And she was largely responsible for the pipeline, which is now being constructed from the Caspian Aral region to China proper.
All right. Now, of course, for our listeners who don't know, Condoleezza Rice was on the board of Chevron Oil Company. In fact, there was a tanker that would go in and out of the communist port in Angola, an oil tanker to take out Chevron oil. And you must understand that Chevron has kept the communists in power there and financed their military in Angola. And, of course, the tanker disappeared one day, the Condoleezza Rice oil tanker. Well, it didn't really disappear. It just left the port, and it returned to port with another name on it. Yes. There no longer is a tanker, the Condoleezza Rice, because, of course, we couldn't let the American people to know that Condoleezza Rice came from the oil companies. Dick Cheney came from, of course, Halliburton. There are certain strong ties certainly Donald Rumsfeld to the establishment. All of these people, of course, have strong ties to these people of great wealth who have a different vision of the world. They believe, of course, in a ruling elite who will determine the course of the future. And, of course, their aim is to create a new world order under American control. We're going to have to take a quick break here at the half hour, and then we'll be back in just a moment with John Spring. Welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Of course, our guest this evening is John Spring. And so, go ahead. Now, John, you were commenting that before the invasion of Afghanistan, and that happened really very, very shortly, shortly after 9/11, yes, we already were really, of course, preparing our staging areas. We already had, of course, troops at that time in Uzbekistan and in several of the other Stan nations there. And we had, of course, our aircraft carriers, and we had other vessels in the Arabian Sea, almost as if we were preparing for an attack on Afghanistan long before the September 11th attacks. correct. Is that true?
Very definitely, that's true, Dr. Stan. And we should also call to our listeners' attention that the primary motive for going into Afghanistan was not really to get rid of the Taliban, per se, as much as it was to get rid of the Taliban because they resisted in the negotiations for a pipeline route from Turkmenistan to Pakistan through western Afghanistan.
Well, now, I thought that we went into Afghanistan because of the Taliban, of course, were oppressing women there, and, of course, they were, of course, had the Sharia law, and, of course, because the Taliban were just such wicked people. But I've never really understood that because we started, at least according to the book on holy wars, we started funding them back in 1994. We funded them through September, through the year 2001. In fact, if you listen to President Bush's speech on September of the 20th of the year 2001, his speech to Congress, he said the United States is the largest source of humanitarian aid to Afghanistan. Well, that's the Taliban, and you're giving humanitarian aid to Afghanistan. You're giving it to the Taliban, who are distributing it. So we were funding the Taliban all that time, and then suddenly we had to convince the American people that they were such terrible people. But their treatment of imposition of the Sharia law is no different than it is in Saudi Arabia. Their treatment of women is certainly very little different than it is in Saudi Arabia, is it?
It was practically identical. In fact, I would say the regimentation of women is far more severe or strict in Saudi Arabia even than it was under the Taliban in Afghanistan.
Are you suggesting then that we really went into war with Afghanistan so we could build a pipeline across the country? And is that pipeline going to be built, or is it too much unrest there at the present time?
Well, the latest reports that I got from Afghanistan today through some good friends of mine basically indicate that there is still a tremendous amount of resistance fighting primarily against the central government at this time. And for this reason, a cousin of the former king has established a new political party within Afghanistan. It's going to be called the National Unity Party. This is sort of a scoop for your listening audience. The National Unity Party will give the population of Afghanistan, those who are able to vote under Afghan laws, the opportunity to decide whether or not they want to continue as a republic or return to the status of a constitutional monarchy, very similar to the type of government you have in Great Britain or the United Kingdom. And the reason for this is because the king, although he is up in age, is very popular, but he does have several heirs that are highly respected as well throughout the Afghan nation. And for this reason, people feel as if they can trust the king more than they can most of the politicians who might acquire enough wealth to run for such a high office as prime minister or president in a republic.
Now, of course, we installed our puppet over there. His man name is Karzai, and he was, of course, working for the UNICAL, Union Oil Company.
Yes.
And, of course, that's the reason we put him in. So we installed an American puppet. We didn't give them an opportunity to elect the man of their choice. We, of course, put in a puppet, and then we wonder why, of course, a nation is just a matter of chaos today, whether it is fighting the Taliban or coming back in from Pakistan. Incidentally, of course, we're giving massive amounts of money to Pakistan to prevent the Taliban from forming there and becoming a center for opposition to the Afghan government that we're trying to keep in power. And the Pakistans are just letting the Taliban open or operate fairly freely, as far as I can tell.
Yes.
But, of course, now, when was the king deposed? Do you recall? Certainly we know that there was a communist puppet government there in 1980. When was the king deposed, and was he overthrown by the communists? What was the story of his leaving power?
He was deposed by one of his cousins. I think his name was Duad or something of that type. He as prime minister, was in power for a little while, and then he was assassinated.
And then the communists came to power in 1978. People like Fahim, for example, who's the current Minister of Defense in Afghanistan. And a year later, in 1979, Soviet armed forces came down the highway that was built so well by the Russians a few years earlier to the specifications that it could withstand the treads of heavy military tanks.
No, but I thought that we had contributed somewhere along the line to a major highway in that area.
Well, we did build a highway of asphalt in the southern portion of Afghanistan, but by contrast, the Soviets built a high-grade, heavy concrete reinforced highway, basically.
So they could bring their tanks in, huh?
Absolutely. But there was a joint effort, but in different geographical regions of Afghanistan. Now today, it's of some interest to note that the Persians are assisting in building a highway leading from Iran to Herat in western Afghanistan. And they're sending in road gangs to construct that highway, but it's looked upon more of cooperation than it is for any future military venture on the part of Iran.
All right. So, first, as far as I can see, Afghanistan is just a basket case. It's a warring faction, warlords. In fact, the communists now are back in control. When the Taliban were in control, there was very little opium being grown. Now that we've brought the communists back in control, and of course, they are really one of the major forces there, why, of course, the opium is being grown widely. Is that true?
Yes, it is true. If I can just go back to Karzai and the king for just a moment, I find it of interest to note that at least as of yesterday, the king was invited by Karzai. Karzai greeted him at the airport when he returned from France, where he had some medical work done. And the former king is going to return to the same rooms that he occupied in the palace. And Karzai and his family will occupy a different portion of the palace. So it seems as if Karzai realistically sees the need for the king returning so that he can get more support from the inhabitants throughout Afghanistan. Now, getting back to what you were saying regarding... I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought.
No, it's all right. I didn't mean to throw you off.
No.
I think that people have to understand that Afghanistan is certainly a field of a few warlords. The Taliban is making a comeback there. The Americans are unpopular. The country is chaotic, and of course, financially is destitute. And of course, what a terrible, terrible tragedy. I believe the Taliban were pushing this radical form of Islam. But you have to understand where these ideas came from. They came from Saudi Arabia, and of course, we were encouraging it. We encouraged the preaching, the teaching of this radical form of Islam to the Mujahideen there in the 1980s. The USAID, the United States Agency for International Development, spent $56 million on textbooks to indoctrinate the youth of Afghanistan and Pakistan in this radical form of Islam.
Yep.
Now, why would we do anything that stupid unintentionally? Well, you have to understand, if you read the book Dollars for Terror, which was written in 1999, the CIA was working with both Pakistani intelligence and Saudi Arabia to create this whole radical Islamic movement. Everybody over there knows that the CIA was behind it, but we can't let the American people know. They might question what happened on September 11th, or who benefited by what happened, that we were already planning on going to war over there. The plans were already there, at least according to the Rebuilding America's Defenses report on the Project for the New American Century website. That's newamericancentury.org website. In a year before the September 11th attack, the plan was for permanently stationing American troops in the Middle East, but the American people would never have gone along with that. There had to be a, as it said in that report, a catastrophic and catalytic event like another Pearl Harbor. Those are their words, not mine.
Yes.
And because that's exactly what's happened. And, of course, the American people are now willing to go along with this, of course, entire change in the thrust of American policy and willing to give up our freedom here in the name of fighting the wicked terrorists who, of course, we originally financed with the help of the Saudis and the Pakistanis.
Yes. As you pointed out, we have basically bought the best enemy money could buy so that we would have these radical terrorists.
And we would then be able to convince the American people that we had to give up our freedom in the name of fighting those wicked terrorists that we financed.
Yes. One other thing regarding your earlier question about the drug activity within Afghanistan, that is mainly focused or concentrated within the Helmand Valley. That's just southwest of Kandahar, a few hundred miles. And what is so interesting, there is a river that flows through that area, and it would not be too difficult to build an irrigation system so that the surrounding countryside could be irrigated. And in so doing, instead of growing crops such as opium, which are conducive to semi-arid climates, because the soils are very rich with irrigation, instead of doing or practicing dry farming, we could help the Afghans grow truck farm crops, vegetables, as well as grains. And that area itself could feed at least 20%, conservatively at least 20% or one-fifth of the nation's food. And that's a significant number. But what is happening right now, Dr. Stan, these farmers, because of the climate and without irrigation, they are almost compelled to grow opium as a cash crop, which actually would not bring them nearly as much currency as would truck farm crops and grains, because and in addition to that, they would actually be feeding some of the people, because what's happening when you plant and harvest opium, there's very little room in terms of acreage for even subsistence farming, for meeting your own needs to sustain yourself. So they are dependent upon food from elsewhere, which means they become a dependent society. So I hope that something can be done within just that one region alone. That would be a tremendous progress if we could just improve that one region of Afghanistan.
Okay, I certainly agree with you, and I just think it's such a tragedy that after destroying the stable government in Afghanistan, then, of course, we've more or less abandoned it to chaos.
Yes, and there was an infrastructure there that was adequate, but after so many war-torn years, it's eroded to practically nothing, and throughout most of areas or regions of Afghanistan, the infrastructure is totally destroyed. But there's one exception, and that's the area of Herat, administered by Ismail Khan. He has been able to collect revenues and rebuild the infrastructure in the region of Herat. And what is so significant about that, you might recall roughly a year ago, Condoleezza Rice was trying to villainize him or vilify him so that we would consider him the target or enemy of the people. And of course, the reason that she wanted to get rid of Ismail Khan at that time is because the proposed pipeline is going to go through western Afghanistan, and Herat is located right in the middle of western Afghanistan. So her intentions were to destroy the leaders that might prove to be a strong resistance to such a pipeline or interfere in some manner.
All right, fine. Well, they had a fairly stable society in Iraq. Certainly, Saddam Hussein was a tyrant, but everybody's forgotten that we backed him at every turn. He was formerly a CIA agent in the 1950s, and that's according to a book on Holy Babylon, published a decade ago. Everybody knows we backed him in the 1980s, and we, of course, left him in power after the first Gulf War. We... and if anybody who hasn't read the book, See No Evil by Robert Baer, you need to read it and find out that repeatedly the Iraqi military tried to overthrow Saddam, and we supported Saddam and betrayed the military, and then we allowed him to, of course, to smuggle oil and, to, of course, to stabilize his regime in violation of the UN Charter. And now, of course, we've gone in and destroyed the infrastructure of that society. It sounds like it's rather chaos there. One of the callers that called in and questioned, are we involved in a guerrilla war in Iraq today?
Well, actually, I think... when you said infrastructure, you hit the nail on the head. We destroyed the infrastructure, and by now we should have been able to rebuild it to the extent whereby at least the urban areas, cosmopolitan areas, should by now at least have their electricity, their gas, their water, and sewage functioning again. But this has not occurred, and these people are becoming very disenchanted. And so we are, in my opinion, generating our own guerrillas of to fight against our own servicemen, because we have not followed through with rebuilding that infrastructure, which should have been rebuilt by now. But I have a feeling that there's no intention on the part of the administration, or at least the Defense Department, to rebuild that infrastructure. It seems as if they are complacent to have GIs being picked off on a daily basis.
Well, I'm sure that the military over there didn't want it, but it certainly would appear that the administrators are not trying very hard. After all, they had an infrastructure before. Why don't they hire those people back that had run it before? Oh, well, they were members of Saddam Hussein's party. Well, that's the same party we backed all during the 1980s. If we're going to, of course, to consider anybody who supported Saddam Hussein as a criminal, maybe we ought to start with George Herbert Walker Bush, who backed Saddam Hussein in the late 1980s. You know, why should we punish the people there? Because, of course, they're backing the Ba'ath Party, members of the Ba'ath Party. If they weren't actually criminals and guilty of any crimes, why not put them into work as police officers? Why not have them, you know, get the electric system working, get the water system working? We're putting our boys over there, and, of course, they're in harm's way. I think a lot of times they get scared. They're afraid somebody's going to shoot at them, and so they shoot first, and of course they kill families, they kill innocent people, and of course they're frightened to death. But that only antagonizes the people there all the more. Would that be a fair statement?
So that's a fair statement. But there's another aspect that we must not overlook, and that is there was a military cooperation pact between Damascus and Tehran, drawn up several months before 9/11, almost 8 months before that event, as I recall. And what was significant about that is that those two nations agreed that if and when the United States or another power were to attack Iraq, that they would directly or indirectly assist Saddam Hussein. So it is possible that some of the snipers are getting some logistical supplies from those two nations. And of course, you may recall we were told about 2 weeks ago to be prepared for another 9/11. And there were also overtures about the fact that both Syria and Iran were warned by the United States that they are not to assist the Saddam Hussein faction within Iraq. And if they do so any longer, that there will be serious repercussions about both of those nations. So it looks as if there's a possibility of an expanding war going both west and east at different times in the future. And if I were a betting person, Dr. Stan, I would bet on Syria and Iraq more so than I would on North Korea or any other region of the world.
All right, let's go to Mike, who's calling in. Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
Hi, Stan. I wanted to ask about NATO and their involvement. There's an article, an AP article in today's paper,
talking about NATO has become the overseer of the troops in Afghanistan.
Now, what does that mean? Does that mean that they aren't overseeing, or that they are already controlling? What's the order of command?
Well, NATO will lead the multinational force as long as necessary, says this Deputy Secretary General, Alessandro Miuto Russo. He says this is a reflection of NATO's ongoing transformation and resolve to meet the security challenges of the 21st century.
Now, they're going to send NATO troops in there then.
They're there. They've got this thing called the International Security Assistance Force, known as the ISAF, which has been there since February.
All right. Now, how many troops do they have? Have any idea?
5,000 with them.
Well, we've got close to 100,000 of our boys.
Uh-huh.
And that doesn't sound like NATO is doing much good there.
Well, NATO is getting bigger, and NATO is getting more involved. The article points out, of course, that this is the first time NATO has stepped outside of Europe.
Well, I would certainly, I want to get our boys out of there before any more of them get killed.
Well, but this ISAF is headed by this German general, Glimeroff, from NATO. Isn't that just peachy? We have, German generals running things over there.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think, though, that in the chain of command they would be superior to our generals. Are you suggesting they are?
Superior depends on how you look at it.
Well,
there
is a chain of command, and of course, mm-hmm. My understanding is the chain of command goes to our generals back here in Washington, D.C. If you have any other information, I would love to hear it. I would think that maybe they were given certain areas to be in charge of, but I haven't read the article. What does it really say, Mike?
You read the whole thing. I just want to point out, our guys were under NATO's command in Kosovo.
I know, but are they under NATO's command in Iraq today? I don't know.
Let's see. I'd have to read it more carefully.
Okay, well, that's your assignment, is to read that article and then and give us a call back.
Yep.
Anything else you want to say?
That's all, thanks.
Well, I thank the caller for bringing that up, because there is another topic which I'm really not that well versed in, but very concerned about, and that is the Patriot Act and the Homeland Security Department, because it appears that we may now be in what is referred to as Stage 3 or Phase 3 of the UN mandate for the United States to disarm, and there may come a time very soon, Dr. Stan, where we will no longer have our major armed forces, with the exception of the U.S. Coast Guard, which will play a larger, more expanding role than it has in the past. But not the type of role that you and I would envision as being positive, but more controlling of the civilian population of the United States. So I'm not too happy about what was just shared with us about the NATO aspect, because it's very possible that we are evolving into a one-world concept whereby the United Nations, which considers NATO as one of its divisions or branches, to be more or less controlling our armed forces over there, and eventually, of course, our armed forces will be disbanded, and if they do remain, they will be placed under UN or NATO control.
Well, I think that basically we have a sort of a new paradigm. In the past, of course, that was exactly what was happening. And now, of course, with this project for the New American Century Group in working control in Washington, D.C., we seem to see a new alignment. We seem to see the Anglo-American establishment in conflict with the Europe and NATO and, of course, United Nations, those two on one side, and then America and England and our few allies, very few allies, on the other. Now, this may all be staged. This may be a new dialectic, of course, and out of the thesis and the antithesis will come a new synthesis. I rather think this is what it's all about, and whether it is being all staged or whether it's real, I don't know, but everything seems to have changed as far as our alignments are concerned, at least as a temporary, on a temporary basis. Do you see that happening at all?
Yes, I do. In fact, what bothers me is the fact that if there is any economic benefit for us being over there, it's primarily for the benefit of the multinationals and certainly more to the benefit of the European nations than it would be for the United States and the rest of North America, for that matter. And when you consider the fact that we were placed in this unpopular role of more or less fighting wars that are basically those of the interest of Israel and many of the European nations over there, you begin to wonder how much longer this is going to continue, and possibly there will become a point where they may stage some type of punishment, and we will then be required to disband our armed forces at the right time from their perspective. Right now, they're happy and complacent for us to do their dirty work for them, but at a later date, we will be punished by the world courts and the United Nations and be forced to disband our military branches.
Well, let's go to Jim calling from Santa Cruz. We're almost out of time. Hi, Jim. How are you doing?
Hi, Stan. I just wanted to make a brief comment that I think, you know, what's going on is that the United States military is being used to do all the dirty work and take the heat. But then once the dirty work is done, they'll have the U.N. come in and take over.
Oh, it's going to be interesting. You may be right. We'll just have to wait and see, Jim. I don't know. I got a feeling there's something skullduggery going on behind the scenes, but time alone's going to tell.
I agree with both of you gentlemen.
Now, there's a guy that's a real diplomat. Anything else, Jim?
That's all. Thanks, Dan. Thank you.
Okay, fine. Well, these are exciting times, ladies and gentlemen. But behind everything that's going on, there are these strong spiritual forces back of all that foes have plotted, back of all that saints have planned, behind the schemes of men and demons is a higher hidden hand. Warp and woof are heaven created every pattern good and wise, oft perplexing by earthly standards, but good and right in heavenly eyes. So something is happening. I'm not sure exactly what it is, but it's certainly not what we're being told. And I share your concern, John, that one day, of course, they will move to disarm the American people, because this is all about a new world order and a new world religion, and, of course, the ultimate destruction of Christianity. Now, Christianity will never be destroyed, but, of course, that is their goal. Of course, we know that in the end, God will prevail. Do you have a parting thought for our listeners?
Well, for those who are able to pick up my program in Southern California, I would encourage them to listen and call in to Sound Off with John W. Spring every Sunday night on KPLS, which is 8:30 on the AM dial at 9 p.m. Sunday evenings. And Dr. Stan, you're doing a wonderful job, and I just pray that you will continue with your ministry because we do need you on the air.
Well, as long as God gives me the ability, I'll be here. God bless you. Thank you so much for coming on with us tonight, John.
Well, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you again.
You're welcome. And our guest has been John Spring. I hope you've enjoyed what he's had to say, and I think he has a tremendous insight and connections with knowledge of what's going on over there. But remember, reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. Pray for America. Pray for our leaders. Pray for our ministers. And please remember to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And if you would like to join the Radio Liberty family and help us, you know our number. So until tomorrow at the same time, Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you.